I'm excited. It's 29 minutes to three, and today in our New Zealand Screen History segment, we're looking back on one of New Zealand's most beloved quiz shows. Sale of the Century ran for more than 1,000 episodes and gave away lots and lots of prizes, including cars. Well, with me for the next half hour to remember those days are, and I've got to say a big thanks to my production team for assembling this incredible lineup. It was you, I think, Amelia Langford. Cheers. Joining me now is show presenter Steve Parr on the line from Brisbane. Hello there, Steve.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
Great to have you on. I've got co-host Jude Dobbs in the Auckland studio. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Nice to see you.
You too.
And the show's narrator, Grant Walker in Wellington. Hi, Grant.
Hi there. Nice to talk to everyone.
Yeah, and Grant, now a key part of the RNZ team as well. Really excited to have the three of you together. Let's get in the mood by hearing the theme.
Tonight on New Zealand's biggest bargain sale, the champion will choose from a selection of fabulous prizes and be in to win the Mitsubishi Mirage GLXI valued at $28,856. Just one of the incredible prizes on Sale of the Century. He is the star of the show, Steve Parr.
Oh, here he is. And here he is in 2021. Does it take you back, Steve?
Oh, that just takes me back. I mean, you're talking 31 years ago when that show started, which is it's a lifetime ago.
Yeah. Grant, your voice, I don't think it's changed much since then. Possibly. Is it possible that it's got deeper?
Oh, age is a wonderful thing. I briefly just spoke to Steve before, and I just said it's good that the voices don't change. The hair colour does, but the voice doesn't so much.
And Jude, what sort of frame of mind does that put you in hearing that?
Well, I'm the only one that my hair colour is still the same. That's because I pay good money. What frame of mind? Well, hi, chaps. How are you?
Lovely.
Hi, Jude. It's so good to talk to you again.
Yeah. I mean, it was a family, really, wasn't it? Would you say that, guys? It was a great time.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, it was Mum and Dad and Little East Frog Ground. It was actually fantastic.
Lovely. Lovely.
He really does love you, Grunt. He does.
Can you each tell me how you got the gig, Steve? Perhaps you first.
How I got the gig? Well, there was auditions being held in 1988. I was in Tauranga at the time, working on the radio VOP, and I was advised that it'd be a good idea if I did the audition. So I flew down to Wellington, as did my wife, Trish Allen. She wasn't my wife at the time. She was actually auditioned as the co-host role, but more on that later.
I didn't know that either.
So I shot down and did the auditions in Wellington, then came back again, and then 2 days before Christmas, I hadn't heard anything. 2 days before Christmas, 1988, got a phone call from, I think it was Tony Skinner, the executive producer of Grundy's at the time, and he said, "We've had a problem with your audition tape. We've lost a lot of it. Can you please come on down?" I thought, oh, my God, 2 days before Christmas. So I flew down to Wellington, walked into the hotel, into the lobby, sat down with them, got a drink in the afternoon, looked out the corner of my eye, and there was this absolutely gorgeous 21, 22-year-old woman walking towards us. One of the team got up and brought this lady over, and I thought, well, this is interesting. What's going on here? And they just said to me, "Oh, by the way, Steve, I'd like you to meet your co-host, Jude Dobson."
Or Jude Kirk.
That's how they told me that I had the job.
That's cool.
Taken down to Wellington on false pretenses and given the job on the spot, which was fantastic, yeah.
So that you couldn't tell anyone, I suppose.
I could then, because I had to have the unusual experience then of ringing up my wife and saying, "Guess what, darling? I got the job, but you didn't."
Okay, Jude, what are your memories of the audition process and getting the gig?
I used to, in another lifetime, be a registered nurse. And to get myself through Manukau Tech, I decided not to wear the funny hat at McDonald's, but I got a modelling job because that was $30 an hour. And that was much better pay.
Yeah.
And back in those days, they used to put the girls into Miss Universe New Zealand, even at you know, you weren't asked. I just got told I was going into one. So I went, oh, okay. I thought, not sure I really want to do that. But did it, and didn't win it. It was Lana's gig. But the head of entertainment, they had one of those days, in those days from TVNZ, said to me, hey, you didn't win it, but we're always looking for people in television. Why don't you stay in touch? So I now sound ancient, but I used to write him letters, about three letters over the following year. And I had a contract modelling up in Japan for a while and wrote to him, and he said, well, why don't you come back? We've got a telethon. You could do some work with John Hawkesby between midnight and three in Hamilton. And I went, okay, yeah. I'll leave the modelling gig from Tokyo. I was sick of it by then. Came back, did that, wrote another letter. And then he said, we've got the show coming up I think you should audition for. And I went, what is it? And he said, it's a quiz show, 5 nights a week. I went, oh, no, thanks. And he said, just give it a crack. You never know where these things go. So I did audition, and I remember that audition very clearly in TVNZ, and there were all these beautiful women lined up to audition, and I couldn't afford to buy a dress, so I made one, and I didn't have time to hem part of it, so I was putting sellotape on the bottom of my hem. In fact, that became a talking point in my little chat with the producer. Left the audition and went, don't think I got that. Went back to my day job because I was a pharmaceutical rep for a drug company. Got a phone call, like Steve did, to go to Wellington for a second audition because I was shortlisted. I went, oh, okay. Went down there, went into that bar and sat down for a drink. And they said, actually, you don't have to do a second audition. Oh, you've got the job.
Wow.
And then my first phone call was to my mother upstairs saying, oh, I've got this job, but I'm not sure if I want it. And she said, you know what? Just give it a crack. So I gave it a crack.
That is cool. Yeah. And of course, you noticed a very handsome man sitting in the hotel lobby bar when you... the breathtaking visage of Steve Parr. Grant, as I recall, you sort of became a star during the show. I mean, it wouldn't have probably been much of a big deal when you got the voiceover job in the first place. Is that fair to say?
Well, it was interesting. I mean, it's taken 32 years for me to hear those stories from a start. I didn't know any of it. They sent, there was a script sent out to about 15 or 20 radio announcers, I think, around the country. And as it turned out, I think I was the only one that actually put music behind it and pretended it was a game show and all that kind of stuff.
Effort, so
made an effort and got it. But yeah, it was the first sort of voiceover gig where someone used their own name. And it wasn't because, it certainly wasn't my decision, but that's what they did in Australia, and they decided that's what they were going to do here, which was why the end was always, this is Grant Walker speaking, which is, even now, you know, I occasionally say that, and people have no idea what I'm talking about, and they go, why have you got written there Grant Walker speaking? I go, it's a long, old story.
It's like Huntington Smythe, you know. It's a hyphenated name.
Yeah.
Steve, would you talk us through how the show worked?
How the show worked?
I've got it on Google if you've forgotten.
There's no Google in it, for sure.
Yeah. Basically, there was the introduction, the big roll in the slide in at the front of the show after that wasn't there for the first couple of weeks, but I'm sure we'll talk about that later too.
Yeah.
The show was basically a first round of quickfire questions, then to the gift shop, with the person who had the most money at the end of that round. They chose to buy or not to buy one of the most fabulous things you could get on the first gift shop. Then into the second round, I think it went into the second gift shop after that, and then into the fast money round after that, Jude, I think.
Oh, I can't remember. To be fair. All I remember is the fame game with that little face in the middle of the board, the home viewer.
That's right, the fame game board, which occasionally didn't work and didn't turn around, and we had to reshoot. And, oh, God, so much fun. And then into the fast money round after the commercial break, into the fast money round to see who was going to be our winner for that particular day.
And nowadays the chase is a huge hit, but similar sorts of elements, I imagine, guys, that you're watching other people play and sort of playing along yourself.
Look, I've got my glass of wine at 5 to 6, cooking dinner at home, and it's the same thing, right? I'm trying to answer those questions going, oh, that person's incredibly thick, or no, I would never have got that one.
What was the story with the questions, Steve? Did you have someone writing them for you?
Doff.
Yep.
Derek Bogg, Doff. Yeah, Derek Bogg, absolutely. He was New Zealand mastermind, international mastermind, absolute brilliant man. He basically coordinated all the questions for us, and there were I mean, you can imagine how many we did over 1,072 episodes. Mm-hmm. That's a truckload of questions mm-hmm. that were put out, and every single one was so carefully researched and analysed so that there could only ever be one correct answer.
Well, that's not true. Now, that's not true, because if you remember that the show was halted for about 2.5 hours because it was a question about the wahine on which
that's
reef.
Right. Yeah.
And the answer was, and I think I've got this right, Barrett's Reef was the answer. And we had
that's
to hold.
Correct. It was on my card.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, we heard in our headphones, hold tape. And all of a sudden, it was being queried. And it took about 2 hours because they had to ring the captain of the inter-island ferry to ask what it was. Eventually, we got hold of the captain, I think, and it was Barrett Reef. Mm. And so the answer was no.
Wow. Yeah, that was one of the ones we stopped for a long time. The other one was when I got a question wrong at the absolute last wrong moment. As we were going into the fast money round, the guy was about to win everything. The last question, if he got it right, he would have won everything. The car, he would have become president of the United States. He would have run everything. And the question that I asked on the card was, which insect has a swimming stroke?
Oh, that's right.
The answer on the card is butterfly. That's pretty straightforward. But I didn't ask that question. I asked which insect has a swimming stroke.
Yeah.
Not is a swimming stroke.
Yeah.
And he yelled out, water boatman.
That's right.
Now, we're talking 2 seconds from the end of the show.
Yeah,
literally.
Remember that.
Stop tape. 45 minutes, 50 minutes later, trying to keep the adrenaline going. And Grant, thank you very much for doing that. And also to
Nick Tansley.
Yeah, studio warmer.
Nick Tansley. He kept everybody going until we checked and checked and checked whether this was the correct answer. Restarted the tape, he buzzed in again, gave the correct answer, bang, end of the show, he won everything. But that was just one of those ones where, okay, it was my mistake. I think it was the only mistake I ever made.
Well, good on you.
Let's go to another clip.
Our memories are not good, are they?
Let's go to a clip courtesy of New Zealand On Screen, and this will give you an idea of the speed of the quizzing.
$20 each. Tony, Lindley, Richard, you have it. You work for the rest tonight. The famous New Zealand group that began life in Simon Street in Auckland is split what? Richard?
Ends.
Yes. What is the usual beverage produced in a percolator? Richard?
Coffee.
Yes. What? When near death, a person is said to have 1 foot in the what? Tony?
The grave.
Yes. Which Prime Minister has a memorial on Bastion Point? Tony?
Mercy.
Michael Joseph Savage does. Which word means both a separation and a line of scalp that shows when hair is combed, Tony?
Parting.
Parting is right. Knives, forks and spoons are known, Richard?
Cutlery.
Good. Good level of questions, eh?
Well,
you can maybe get them, but can you get them as fast as the person next to you?
And under stress.
Yeah.
And that is why that program went to number one for so many times.
Yeah. Was it an instant hit, Steve?
If we talk instant being within a month, yes. The first 2 weeks we were on TV2. I think it was 2 weeks, I think we were on TV2 before they moved us over to TV1. And we started at the same time Paul Holmes did, doing the Holmes show. Put it this way, there were 3.3 million people living in New Zealand at the time. Regularly, the ratings came out, and Sale of the Century is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 every week.
Yep.
So that's just how unbelievably popular and powerful that show was, and I would say it only took a month or two before it became number one and just stayed there.
No choice, though. No internet. And only two channels.
No,
a third one by the time they got to the end of the year, which I think was why they bought the format, because TV3 was coming in. So this was their programming to try and run through out of town.
We're hearing from lots and lots, as you can imagine, lots of listeners and many people who appeared on the show. Wonderful to hear Steve and Jude. I was on Sale of the Century in 1990. I lasted 4 nights and it was such a lovely, friendly, welcoming environment, says Rowena.
Nice.
Somebody else said that they tried and eventually got on. They weren't too successful, but they're still using their Ulrich extendable ladder when they lock themselves out of the house.
Good to know.
But do they have the board game?
I want the board game. Where the hell is the board game? Is there one on Trade Me? I want the board game. Ah.
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah,
you took it to Australia with you, Steve Parr.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
I want the money clip too. Where's that?
Yeah, never got one of those. Didn't get it. Never got a money clip.
And what would you do with a money clip anyway? What was the point of that? Like, only if you have a big tie, right? You'd use it on your tie.
I think it was so you could bring it out and say, "Oh, look at my sale of the century."
Yeah. We've got one of the assistant floor managers listening. They're at the TVNZ Avalon crew. As the crew, we love Jude, partly because she was on occasions called to help a crew member who needed medical assistance.
Oh, yes, that's true. Nursey and me, yep. Yeah.
Can I just ask, out of interest, how you view that role now, Jude?
Oh, look, the 54-year-old feminist in me, my hair is very straight, as you can see, but it probably goes curly. but, you know, times have changed. I would say that I'd push the pendulum slightly. There was a little bit of pushback at the time. The question was, would I be a hostess or a co-host? I said, I think the words are important, so we agreed I'd be a co-host.
Yeah, great.
But I got lots of pushback in the first 3 months about talking too much.
Yeah.
And I resigned, actually, little known fact.
But you resigned after 3 months?
After 3 months, I said to the producer, I said, look, this is rubbish. I'm going to go back to bedpans and injections. Or actually, I was drug repping by then. Drug repping, that sounds terrible. Mm. Didn't have a boot of anything too terrible. It was all legal.
But you said no more.
Yeah, I said no more because I started, you know, reading the papers and the fan mail was rubbish. So I thought, I don't have to put up with that. And then they said, look, just give us 3 months to find somebody else. Just, look, just stick with it. You never know.
Yeah.
And then after 3 months, I said, no, actually, I think I will stay. The press has got a bit better. The mail I'm opening when I come down to work seems good. And it wasn't for like 2 or 3 years later they told me that they started opening my mail and only giving me the good mail. So there you go. Funny old thing.
What was it like for you becoming a national celebrity, Steve? I presume you got very famous very fast.
Well, it happened very quickly, very, very quickly. So much so, I mean, Trish and I were not married at the stage. We did get married in 89 in April. God, I hope I got that right. Yes, it was April. But it got to the stage where we had to literally do strange things around the house. I had to blacken out and mirror the windows of my house facing the street, because we'd be sitting there in the evening watching telly quite happily and look in the mirror, and there in the window are people with their faces peered up against the window trying to peer in, because everybody knew where I lived. I really love to have a lot of privacy. I'm a very private guy. But I always was totally approachable, but I drew the line at people invading my privacy at home. And it was very, very difficult to get over that in the first place. Luckily, as Grant will attest to, being in radio for the amount of time that I've been in there, and also on What Now television and things beforehand, I was quite used to it. Trish, my wife, was also a little bit used to it, because she used to host the news on Dunedin television for a couple of years as well. So it wasn't a huge wrench, nowhere near as much of a wrench as it would have been for Jude, I'm sure. And I know that she got absolute crap from so many people.
Yeah, I did to start with. I got to say, I had my own stalker too for a while.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Yeah, back in the days of landlines, I had my own landline at home, a separate line, and so it was a private number that nobody knew. And then this guy would ring it and leave strange messages and tell me that he knew my car registration when I came in. So anyway, that wasn't much fun.
No, I can imagine.
Anyway,
was it fun?
It was fun. There was as I say, it's a family. We spent twice a week we'd be recording. It was just it was a good family, a great crew, really good people.
Steve?
Yeah, and we spent a lot of time going all around the country together, going off to different events and promotions and things all around the country for years. It was a lot of fun. It really was a family. The intensity of the 2 days or 3 days a week or every second week that we were recording was absolutely phenomenal. Because you recorded 5 shows in one day.
Well, we started doing that, didn't we? And then in the end, we were doing up to 20 in 2 days.
Yeah. Because everybody said it couldn't be done, wasn't it? The Australians came over and said, no, we're doing it 5 shows in a day. I went, it's never been done.
Yeah. But you wouldn't have known.
Some days we got them done in 5 hours, and some days it took 10 hours.
Oh,
Want to take a moment to remember some of the well-known contestants on the show, including Hamish McDowell,
yes,
who is now
mayor
of Whanganui. And Hamish appeared on the show in 1989 at about the age of 19. These are his memories that he described to us when we gave him a call to chat to him about it.
Well, it was the brand new thing on the block, sale of the century. Everyone used to gather around the TV at 7 o'clock, and so when they had auditions in Dunedin, I was a poor Dunedin student at the time, I thought, look, I've got to do it, and went along to Otago Girls High School where they had the auditions, and saw, you know, 100 people there, if not 200, and we had to answer a few general knowledge questions and do a bit of a personality check, and then I thought, oh, well, I'll never hear from them. And a week later, I was in Wellington, flying up to Avalon to do my first episode. So I've got to say the flashing lights and the loud noises, I've still got the buzzer noise in my head that finished the game, made me quite nauseous on the very first episode. But I won that episode, and I thought, well, it's kind of a bit like the mayoralty, the advantage of incumbency. I thought, well, I know everybody else who sits in the seats will feel as disorientated as I did.
Hamish actually went on to win big.
Yeah, so it was 9 nights in a row, and it was really quite exciting. I had to be flown up twice more in order to do the full 9 nights. So, yeah, from Dunedin, that was extremely exciting for a student to be put up in a hotel. And Avalon, of course, was quite iconic back in the day. And it was great to meet Judith Kirk, and in particular, she was absolutely charming. So it was a lot of fun. And finally, had a very close fought battle with a guy called Mitch. On the second to last night, and that was to win the car, and everyone expected me just to take the car, but I kept on going, and I won the night tonight, and that was that's all she wrote.
Pretty cool. We're talking about, if you just tuned in, by the way, Sale of the Century, and incredibly, in one radio, well, not in one studio, but in one interview, we have Steve Parr, Jude Dobson, and Grant Walker. Steve, did you know that there was a band in Christchurch in the early 2000s called the Steve Parr Slide?
Yes, I did, and I'm sure they're not going anymore, but I actually rang and spoke to the band and gave them my blessing, say, yeah, you can use it, it's fine, and they actually had quite a few nice tracks.
Come on, you had a cut of the pie. Come on.
Tell us about the slide, Steve. How did it? Where did it come from? Or for people who never saw it, what was the big idea? Have we still got Steve there? Oh, we've lost Steve in Brisbane.
Oh.
Perhaps you should tell us the slide as you remember it, Jude.
The slide as I remember it. Well, Grant. Actually, Grant, your turn.
Well, Tony Barber in Australia used to, because their show was ahead of ours, so he would come through the doors and he would do a bit of a kick of a ball. And so they needed to get Steve from there to the podium. And so I know that there was discussions that went on as to what he was going to do. And it was eventually decided that the slide was going to happen. And, of course,
Steve's back now. You can pick up the story if you like, Steve.
Sorry, I missed most of that. Something I don't know what happened. It's probably
that's all right. You're sounding good. You're sounding good now. Grant's given us a bit of an introduction, but do you recall starting to use the slide on screen?
Yes, the first two or three, I think the first couple of weeks of the episodes were not with a slide, and there was something missing when we reviewed the tapes. There was something missing about the energy level of the show. And so I had a word to, I thought, oh, let me try to figure out something. I had a word to the guy on camera two, who was the camera that followed me wherever I went, and said, I'm going to do a little hop, skip and a jump and slide in on one of the episodes, follow me, and stop at the podium. And as it happened, it worked perfectly, and they bought it, and away we went. That was just one of those things to get that zing at the front of the show, which was missing.
It was such a huge hit, this show, and Steve, why did it ever finish?
I'll give you the political answer to that.
No, give us the real answer.
Look, in effect, we were too strong a pulling power too strong at that time slot because we were damaging dramatically the ratings of TV2's Shortland Street. And we're having an absolutely devastating effect at that time on TV3, of course, which was good as far as TVNZ was concerned. But because Shortland Street was having virtually no audience, they decided to move Wheel of Fortune into our time slot and move us into 5:30. Unfortunately, the audience for Start of the Century wasn't home from work at 5:30. The ratings died. The show's too expensive. They canned it. Yeah, and I must admit, I did express my disappointment quite strongly to the powers that be in TVNZ at the time, which is probably why I haven't worked for them since.
Any regrets, Steve, or do you feel pleased that you spoke your mind at the time?
I'm very pleased I spoke my mind at the time. I don't have any regrets about anything I ever do. I may have wanted to do a few things differently, but I don't have any regrets of anything I've done. I'm pretty straight up and down about that, yeah.
What do you remember of those final days, Jude?
Well, I stuck with TVNZ, so I knew I was going to... Because the show went to three, didn't it, Steve? For how long did it go on?
Yeah.
Three, four? A year or so?
It was on three only for about 7 months with Julie White, and that was in Auckland, and there was a break of about 6 to 9 months between finishing on TVNZ and starting on three. Wow.
Garden leave for the show. I hung with TVNZ and I became the lifestyle person in the
90s. 5:30 with Jude.
Yeah, so I got the 5:30 slot eventually.
We do have a little clip from the final show in June 1993, and we have this lovely snippet, thanks to New Zealand On Screen, and Jude is introducing a prize at the gift shop, I think she almost gets the giggles. Here it comes.
American baseball is proving very popular indeed in good old NZ, and as a result, such happening gear as this, it's National Basketball Association package, that's what we've got there, it's proving very popular indeed. The Chicago Bulls are one of the best teams in the US, so you can support their winning form with a comfortable and stylish nylon jacket. Go on, take the opportunity, why don't you? You also get an embroidered cotton cap, normally valued at $300. Tonight, you can be on the ball, so to speak, for just 2 3-pointers from Starter Clothing and Sale of the Century.
I'll get it.
What was going on there?
All the advantages of a last show.
Absolutely. Richard, the basketball
clip. So your producer sent me that clip because I hadn't seen anything for ages, actually. I didn't even know you could see it online. And I watched it, and that was, I think, Jan Fluk, who was one of the models. He was just, last episode, give it a go. So he was being reasonably amorous and putting his arms around me, and that's why I was going, hey, you know, why not? Yeah, take the opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah, a few little, you know, nuances there about things.
But you laughed all the time.
I did lose it on a few occasions. Once I really lost it. Do you remember that? I was crying. I was losing it so much.
Probably why people liked you so much. We've got about a minute to go. And can we just go around the houses with what you're each doing now, Steve?
I work in renewable energy. I promote and sell solar panels and all that sort of thing. So I'm right to the Green Earth type style of things and loving every minute of it.
Very cool. Jude?
I write, produce, direct. My baseline is documentary making about World War I, World War II, and I have a other end of the spectrum, a resource called Raising Children, which is a video resource for parents.
Where can people find that, by the way?
Oh, that's just online. It's a free resource. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you want to do that?
Because I used to be a nurse in the maternity wards and a National Womb, and I realised that it's a pretty hard jacker having a baby, so I thought I'd quite like to make a video resource on how to breastfeed and all those bits. Yeah,
cool. Mm. And Grant, you do pretty much everything here, don't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I do a bit of programming on national radio and responsible for training the journalists and voice, etc.
You'd be amazing at that.
Grant Walker responsible.
And he rings me and my husband every year on our birthdays for the last 31 years.
Sorry, Steve.
You're all very busy, and I'm so grateful that you've taken some time with us today. Steve, Grant and Jude, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Good night, the rest of New Zealand.